his program. I think you probably know Bert and Matt, and I don't know your name.
Kim.
And Larry Phillips, our regional directors here. So thanks for taking some time out of your evening to visit with us. Oh, I said Kurt.
Yeah.
I got him.
Yep.
I know better than that. But anyway, thanks for taking some time out of your evening to visit with us this evening. I'm going to set the stage a little bit and then turn it over to Annette. We've got five or six, maybe seven slides, so pretty short PowerPoint. Hopefully everybody can stay awake. But I'm going to provide a little overview of how we got here tonight. And basically, in a nutshell, prior to 2008, it's my understanding that we didn't have a fishery during the month of March. And what we did is, based on healthy returns of fish, we added a month to that fishery. So March 1 through March 30th. And implemented selective gear rules at that time. Fast forward to 2015-17 time frame, based on feedback. Based on feedback we received from the public, we engaged in a rule simplification process. So what we were hearing was people were saying they needed to have their attorney with them to be able to navigate our rules based on the complexity. And our director at that time set us down the path, and our commission set us down the path to simplify rules statewide. And as a result of that, we had hundreds of rules, as you can imagine, hundreds of rules that were subject to the rule simplification process. We wrapped that up in 2017 with a series of hearings and meetings in front of our commission. And one of the rules that was adopted as part of that was aligning that section above the 101 with the rest of the river and removing those selective gear rules that are in place prior to March 1. After those rules were adopted, it didn't take very long for my phone to ring, and people were asking, what happened? How did this happen? What are we doing? We don't like this rule. We want to change. So talk through that process about, it's not as simple as us just saying, okay, we're going to change it back, right? There's a statute, there's RCW that requires the process, and that's what we're doing here tonight. So as a result of that conversation, we received a petition in December of last year, brought it in front of our commission via a conference call in January, and what the commission did was they denied the rule, they denied the petition based on the merits of the petition. But what they said was, it's not just about those merits. If from a social perspective, if the public wants this rule changed back, we're willing to listen. So they set us down this rulemaking path, which we're on today. This public hearing or this public meeting we're having right now is part of our formal comment period on this. Well, the commission tasked us with including this with our salmon season setting rules. The WAC is already open, so it makes sense to just, while the WAC's open, take advantage of it and have the conversation about this rule on the hump tulips. So Annette's got some slides. We'll walk through those slides, and then we'll move into that comment period. And the comments we get from you all tonight will be part of that record. I think, are we recording this?
Yeah, yes. Well, we can do the whole 3-minute.
Well, we can do that. We don't need to keep it to three. We want to hear what you have to say about this rule. Again, that's why we're here tonight. I'm going to be sitting over there taking some notes. We're going to be scribing to make sure our notes match up with what we heard. And again, it'll be part of the formal rulemaking process. We'll put it in front of our commission. We'll be briefing them on the comments we've heard today. I think, Ned, you've got a slide that talks about some of the comments we've received in writing so far.
Yep.
So again, want to thank you for taking the time. I'm going to shut up, sit down, and hand it over to Ned.
Okay,
Kim's
going to dim the lights so we can see a little bit better. And Kurt is going to... Thank you, Kelly. Did a great job of kind of describing what we want to do. But we want to start with just some background information about, more specifics about how we got here. Then we'll talk specifically about the petition that we got and what it is. And then we want to just talk a little bit about the petition process, because this is a very formal process that we're in right now. So we just want to make sure everybody understands why we can't just flip a switch and say, okay, let me make it happen. Then we'll go into some of the comments that we've received to date, and then we'll have a time for get public input tonight. We have a microphone here. We'd like you to sit in front of the microphone so we can make sure that we hear. We'll be posting this on our website later, along with all the material. So, and then once we're done with that, we'll talk about what are the next steps. Okay. So, essentially, when we look at the Hunt Phillips population, it's fairly healthy, it's fairly stable, it meets its escapement goal fairly often, and about over 70% since 1981 or 91, something like that. So, we don't have a conservation concern right now with this dog. And that's really the point of those pieces. And if you want this, we can get you a copy of the presentation. So prior to 2008, we had bait, but we didn't really have February, or we didn't really have March. So the bait was allowed to, because there's a hatchery in the section of river. If you've got the summary handout sheet, there's a, for those, I mean, I'm assuming you guys all know this this river better than I do, but there's a map there, and outlined is a we'll blow it up here quickly, but there is a hatchery just below the section of river, the Hunt Phillips hatchery, and it has a summer and winter release of hatchery fish, and it's a very popular fishery. So with bait, people go out and look at the hatchery fish. So then in 2008, the season was extended, but the selective gear rule was put on in March in that section. And then with the rules of engagement, I don't need to go back through what Kelly just did, but we just wanted to align. That was part of what we were doing on a lot of rivers, so that you didn't have to be a local or an expert to fish there. You could. So if you wanted to go over to somewhere in Puget Sound, you wouldn't have to worry if you were over this side of the line or this side of the line what the rules and regulations were, right? Trying to make it more simple for folks. So that's what happened in that background. And so, as Kelly said, there was some concerns with what happened. So this is the section, Highway 101 up to Donkey Creek, to the confluence, and then to the Donkey Creek. So essentially, what the petition asked for was to reinstate the selective gear rules in March in Hunt Phillips in that section of river. So that's what we're talking about tonight. Okay? So, to do this, all that happened through a rulemaking process that is also a very formal process. So now, what happened was if someone doesn't like the rule, anyone can petition the commission or any agency on any rule that they adopt. So this is a process, it's prescriptive, it's an RCW by the Office of Financial Management. If a petition is filed, the agency has a certain amount of time to respond, and responds in one of two ways. Either takes the petition forward, and then because the petition is asking to change a rule, has to initiate rulemaking to make that change. Or they'll deny the petition, and then they put in writing why the petition is denied, and if there are alternative means to address the concern that are different from what the petition asked for, then they can do that. And that's what we're doing here. And then if the petitioners are still unhappy with the outcome of this petition process, there is also an appeals process. And you can find that all in the RCW language. Okay? So then what happened with this one, we got the petition on December 10th. On January 25th, on a conference call, the Fish and Wildlife Commission, they denied the petition based on the conservation concerns. But they did recognize there might be social values that weren't, that should be considered, and so directed the department to bring this forward through a public process. Didn't want it to get wrapped up and overshadowed by Northrop Falcon. So that's why we're here separately tonight from Northrop Falcon. But using the Northrop Falcon rulemaking process, which, again, the opening up of WACs and all that, that's all the jargon that we have to pay attention to make sure that we are compliant with the law. But this is the quickest way to get implementation of the change back. And it wouldn't be effective until 2020. So if it goes to adoption, then it'll be in place July 1st of 2019. But because it's March, it'll be effective early in 2020. So on April 9th, we put out a news release, and we directed people to provide us some public comments at the Grace Harbor email address. And then tonight, we're also collecting public input.
Can I jump in for 1 second?
Minute?
So on that second to the last bullet, if you don't want to come up and speak into the mic and give us your 2 cents, that's an option for you still, and that's going to be available through when? Annette, do we know for sure how long the comment period lasts?
It was through tonight, wasn't it?
That's what it said in the news release, correct?
Okay, so if you don't want to talk and you want to comment, go home, log on, and type it up before midnight.
Okay. So then, here's the public comments that we've gotten today. We've got a total of 9. And the bullet points aren't reflective of how many we've got in each category. The top category was just comments based on maintaining the current rule as is. So don't go back to the selective gear restriction. And these are just some of the reasons that were provided in their comments. So the reason for the rule change still exists was essentially there are folks out there who like to fish with bait and barbed hooks. One person said rescinding the rule indicates a lack of a clear plan. Sometimes that happens when you're trying to satisfy a diverse public. Barbed hooks create more encounters and wears fish out more was someone's concern. Bait is helping to land hatchery fish. And for those comments we got in that want to reinstate, to go forward with this rule process and reinstate the selective gear, talk about reducing it, we'll reduce flossing of the fish, but we need more enforcement to make sure that happens. And would like to see some additional protections for the fish during the month of March. So that's what we've done so far. And so now I think would be the time to give the floor to you guys and for you guys to give us some of your thoughts and ideas. So we just kind of reinstated what the proposal was, and we're ready to have you come up to the mic.
Maybe before we do that, any I know there's lots of thoughts and we're going to hear those tonight, but any questions on how we got here? And I think, you heard me talk earlier about this statewide rulemaking process and the hundreds and hundreds of rules. And looking back, it'd be real easy for me to stand up here and say, well, hell, we publicized this and we had public hearings, and if you didn't like the rule, you could have said something then. It would be real easy for me to stand up here and say that, but I couldn't do it with a straight face knowing what I know. And what I know was there were a lot of rules at play. It happened in a pretty short amount of time when you think about it, right? We spent the first year and a half with staff going through people like Kurt, looking at their districts and their areas and figuring out, okay, where could we simplify and where, so there was a lot of thought that went into it that took a lot of time. And then at the end, it was a pretty fast process. So I can fully understand how this, if I put myself in your shoes, I can't say that this wouldn't have got by me, because it would have. But I just want to acknowledge that up front and maybe talk a little bit about the thought process going into this rule change. And I know Mike isn't here, recovering from a hip replacement surgery. Mm-hmm. So hopefully he'll recover pretty soon. But just maybe to highlight some things that we talked about prior to proposing this as part of the simplification, talked about the fact that it's that, and if I get this wrong, you guys are the experts, you know, correct me. I'm not going to hurt my feelings, but my understanding is, based on the information we had, not a lot of spawning happening. It's early in the run, represents maybe about a third of the overall spawning that occurs during that time frame. So those are kind of the key, and again, going back to what Annette said, we're dealing with a relatively healthy population, right? We're lucky that that's the case. So I get the fact that, boy, we don't want to see this population that's relatively healthy wind up like those populations in Puget Sound and some of the other ones. So I get what you folks who are upset about this rule change are coming from. But I think it's important for you guys to understand, for you all to understand that this wasn't something that just, let's just do this. You know, there's a thought process going into it. Whether you agree with that thought process or not, we can talk about that. But just reading some comments that I've seen on social media and reading, getting some voicemails from folks, want you to know that it wasn't just we're just going to do this without any thought process going into it. Tried to think about it. One of the things that came up as a result of this rule petition, I was talking to Tom and a guy by the name of Jonathan Stump, and they said, you know, those juveniles in there, elite eggs. You guys didn't think about that, you know, and I don't know if we did or not, but that's a good, you know, that's a good reason to reconsider a rule like this, right? We got juveniles that would want to go out into the salt, do their thing, and come back. And if this rule is impacting those more so than we believe, that feels like a pretty good conservation measure to me. But regardless of whether or not we think it's a conservation measure, the commission doesn't. The good news is, for those of you who are interested in this rule being changed back to the way it was, is they've given us the green light to consider it for social reasons. So is this rule, the question then becomes, is this rule socially acceptable? Is the public willing to accept this rule? And if they are, that's fine. If they aren't, we'll consider changing it back. So I just wanted to share that with you all. The two things, one, it was a pretty wild and woolly rulemaking process that would have been easy to get by somebody, even if you weren't paying attention. And two, the rationale for why we did what we did. So that's that. And then before we move into the comment period, I just want to take a few minutes and see if anybody has any questions that we can try to answer for you. So,
isn't conservation more important than the social aspect of the fish? We concern more about the conservation than what people think.
So we're a conservation-based organization. We get beat about the head and shoulders pretty regularly for closing fisheries because we've got conservation needs. So I would say in many cases, yes. In most cases, yes. But I would also say that I want to reiterate, when we thought about this rule change, we couldn't identify a conservation concern based on what I said earlier.
Well, but based on your count, right?
That's what I was going to say.
Your count.
Let me take.
There's no conservation concern yet. But look where we're at with the salmon. Isn't an ounce of prevention worth 10 pounds of cure?
So I appreciate that. And there's no issue out there that's got more opinions on than whether we should be using bait or barbel soaks or...
I'm not using fish up that high. I'm
so looking at this. I got John's fish. Let me get there for you. So I appreciate all the calls. At first, this thing came to light, and, you know, Jim and Tom and everybody else started calling. I get it, right? You guys care. I mean, that's the bottom line is we want this fish to be around. But the challenge for the agency is this the just the right amount of conservation need, right? We can't look at this whole system and say, well, without that rule in place, it's over the top. With the rule in place, it is. We look at we look at this from a whole basin standpoint and say, how are we addressing meeting the statement objectives? How are we offering opportunities? We've already got conservation closures in there. You know, we don't have this past March. So we're trying to protect those fish. So from our perspective, we are addressing those conservation needs. Now, absolutely, you can look at that tracking, and we're following that, and we're looking at the number of days or the number of years we're not meeting our conservation objectives. And then when we're not, we're stepping back from that and looking at it and saying, why? Are we handling too many fish? Are we killing too many fish? What is the reason we're not meeting our conservation objective? It's not because we have a closure for bait on a stretch of river that's You know, certainly that can have some effect on
juvenile
fish. But if we're not meeting our conservation objectives, we got to look at the whole system. We got to look at the whole thing and say, cumulatively, what effect are we having? We're handling most of our fishing pressures downstream. We've got hundreds, thousands of angler days downstream that are handling wild fish. And this is the same. We just can't.
Here's the tightrope we're walking with that, with, you know.
I just want to make sure this graph is what I'm seeing. We're looking green wild fish. This is back in the day. This is now. Correct?
Yeah.
I just want to make sure.
So if you look at
my point is, you guys are saying there isn't. We don't have to worry about the conservation right now. I'm looking at us going. Well, I think we got it.
I see. The 2008 is when you implemented it. Correct.
It's like a year where we had
2008. Is that because of the
month of March?
Is that because of the super all time low there? Is that why? I mean, why did you put it in?
They would have been a two-year prior cycle that would have got that in place before we did that, right? Because it takes a little while. It wasn't a reaction.
Yeah, I'm just asking why it was. Why was it implemented?
So, good question. And before I go there, let me just point out a couple things. So on this graph, there are two. The green line is the wild run size. The blue line is what actually escaped the fishery. So if you're like right here, you're both below the line. So even without fishing, we wouldn't have made the escapement hole. So fishing isn't really. There's only one time after 2008 where they sort of separated down the line. But the other thing that we're looking at is when we're above the escapement hole, we're a lot further above the escapement hole than when we're below it.
Why was it implemented?
Well, it was implemented because in 2008.
Do you have a March fishery? Is that basically?
Yeah, we thought there was room for it.
Right.
And we still believe there is.
So one of the things, you know, yeah, that graph looks pretty ugly over time. But in the last 10 years, that red line there, I think, is that a 10-year?
This is when the irrigators
put
in.
About 80, a little over 70% of the time we've met escapement. So when we say we have to be real careful, so we're trying to provide as much opportunity as we can in the face of conservation. And sometimes they don't line up very well at all, right? So with this particular rule we're talking about, if we say we've got a conservation concern with the month of March, we better be ready to say we've got a conservation concern the rest of the year as well. So just,
which that's what you guys' job is. You based on the run, you have to try and salvage or whatever, correct?
Yeah, we're trying to carve out fisheries where we can.
Opportunity. But a lot of it has to do with the area that we're talking about. I mean, I'm sure we probably don't have that data, but that's probably the area from there up that that's in question. Is where most of the reds are.
Well, maybe we should close it.
What's that?
I mean, maybe we should close it. Then, if that's the case, if we're fishing on spawning fish.
Well, now you're saying close it.
Well, I'm asking you.
No, no.
You're telling me there's a major problem.
No,
that's not what he's doing.
No, I'm not saying.
That's not what he's doing.
I'm just looking at the data.
Yeah.
And I'm just asking if I'm trying to figure it out. I think that you guys are for leaving it. Or maybe it's a commission and you guys aren't. I don't know. But I'm trying to figure out why it was implemented and then versus, you know, I mean, because I know I've been fishing it for 40 something years and I can tell you right now that's from 101 up is where most of the reds are. That's where most of it happens. But I do see them below.
So that's what this is showing here. That's showing you density of spawning. That's what this graph is. I mean, this map is showing.
There's spawning that starts here and goes all the way up. Red is more dense spawning, orange is less dense.
And I think our thought process, going back to what I said earlier, is because it was early in the run, not a lot of spawning happening at that time, which is why we thought we could eke out a fishery. in the month of March.
And we're, right now we're only talking about the selective year part of the rule. We're not talking about closing March. We're not talking about, talking about whether we have the selective year rule in March or not. That's the only thing on the table.
Going back to what I think the other part of your question, figuring out whether we're for it or against it, I don't care. I'll just be honest with you. I don't care. I want to ensure that we're not harming the fish, and I want to also make sure that we're providing opportunity where we can.
Yeah.
So where the commission lands on this, I don't have skin in the game. Based on where I said about, we don't think we've got this conservation concern. And if we do think we've got a conservation concern, we better be looking at the whole river.
Let me ask you this, Jim. Did you guys see more effort up there this year because of bait? Do you believe you did?
I can't say that. I'm just saying, I feel like we're fighting you guys to put it back to what it was. And it was implemented, I believe, because of their wild steelhead.
Because we had some,
I'm sure, like I say, most everyone in this room fishes pretty regular. Mm-hmm. Bait, because we're not just talking about bait. We're talking about a plug with two treble hooks of any size with bait wrapped on it, or we're talking about a horizontal profile of a double hook bait diver rig with sand shrimp or whatever.
Hard on fish.
That's a dead fish.
Yeah.
So
when we get ready for this meeting, we went back and looked at, when did we implement this fishery and why did we go selective gear?
Yeah.
We know
2008.
Yeah, and we know why, because we wanted to eke out some more opportunity, but we can't tell you why we just thought maybe we should do that. Maybe we should do selective gear, but there was no rationale that we could find written down. So I want to get to, I think you've had your hand up along the way.
Yeah. Okay. When you implemented this, this is a way to open that up in March with no bait. I cannot understand why you would change it from one area to another. I mean, if you got bait in the lower river, you should have bait in the upper river.
Okay, so that I'm going to ask you to save that for the testimony part. You can provide us that. But if you got a question, did you have your hand up? Do you have a question?
Yeah, I can take you back a long time on the history on this. It was back in the late 80s, early 90s, when we went for conservation efforts to get the fishing out of the below Donkey Creek down, because we were up there watching people pull them. Fish right off the reds. Fishing right in the reds above Donkey Creek and even below. And at that time of year, that was in January, February, and March, you also were pulling the silvers off of the reds at the same time. So we fought hard at that time. I wanted to be a fly fishing stream somewhere instead of Washington. So with Charlie Levin, I was with the time now, there are a bunch of kicking in the backyard people. I got out of there, but that was conservation with them. We fought to get no fishing above Forks Hole. We did that for a few years. Okay, then the population started to come back. And we agreed to go fishing above the Forks Hole if they went to the Smith to see a fishery.
Okay.
And that's how I got over back up in March.
Okay.
And that has been a long battle. And there's another thing that came in at the same time. There's no power boats allowed up there, and it's in the pamphlet. Is that a fish and wildlife regulation? Is that from the county?
No power boats. Fish and wildlife regulation is still combustion motor restriction for steelhead.
How did that get put in? That must be one of these little deals that it was kind of a backdoor deal. I'm going to tell you, I go to all the meetings, okay, and I have a jet boat. And I would have been opposed to that, so that was one of these sneaky little deals that got shoved in somehow back door.
But put back when they wanted to ban power boats on the lawn. We were told that you cannot cannot restrict power boats. They say you can't fish out of this power boat.
That's right.
Is that what that rule is?
It's a fishing permit in both in 2000.
But it says no internal combustion engine is allowed above 101. Does that mean you can fish out of the boat can run?
You cannot fish out of that boat.
So I can come out there on my sled and fish. Get off the gravel market.
You can bird watch, you can do whatever. That's a county rule. That's not a county restriction. It's a fish and wildlife restriction.
So I can run my boat up there and get on the gravel bar and fish.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, it's
fixed. That's not what it says in the book.
You just no, can't no, fish.
That's not what it says in that. There's no definition of it in here. It says our boat's restricted above 101 bridge.
That's what it says.
I'll show it to you if you want to read it. It's what it is, Dad. There's no definition in Russell.
How long do you have been in? Do you know that?
Probably 10 years or so.
2008.
Okay. And the reason for that was they wanted, the drifting wanted that section.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, you know, the commercial fishermen up there wanted that section.
All right. Let's move into the public comment piece. Sir, do you want to go first?
I'll go first.
If you come up here and speak into the mic for us, it'd be appreciated.
Actually, if you can come over here, all right.
Wherever you want.
Where's the mic?
You can just state your name, and then you can start.
Are you ready?
I'm in your comment. Yep, I'm ready for it.
Art Holman, sports. I fished the Hop Tulips in 1970, and we had lots of steelhead back then. This rule they put in where you can't fish out of power boats above 101 is a bunch of baloney. And there's no reason why we can't fish bait above 101 bridge. You can use cork and yarn and all the rest of it. You might as well be able to use bait and barbed hooks. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else have a comment they want
to? You guys want to make a comment for the record?
I'll make a comment.
My name is Joe Durham, recreational conservation fisherman in Grace Harbor. I live in Montesino, or Central Park. I'm in favor of keeping the restricted fishing rules in effect up there, and no fishing above the Forks Hole prior to the 1st of March, because you do have salmon spawning up above there, and no fishing above the Donkey Creek Bridge at any time for steelhead, because you're in the heart of the spawning grounds and pulling them off the reds. So keep the restricted rules in order.
So you want this elected beer rules to
stay?
Put back in the
right. Amen. And the worst one. Go ahead, Tom.
My whole comment is on the record.
Okay.
You can just state your name.
My name is Tom Moonen. I am the owner of Action Northwest Guide Service and the president of the Grace Harbor Sport Fishing Coalition, representing a number of guides, businesses, and recreational anglers in the Grace Harbor area. I respectfully request that WDFW move forward with this rule change back to selective gear on the Hump Tulips River from March 1st through March 31st and follow the recommendation of both the commission and your staff. Over the past 9 months, I've been working with anglers and guides from the basin to show your staff and commission through meetings and information sharing the value, importance, and broad-based support this rule change has. This loose coalition has included my group, the Olympic Peninsula Guide Association, the Wild Steelhead Coalition, the North Olympic Peninsula Sport Fishing Coalition, and the Northwest Guides and Anglers Association. While we might disagree about the importance of making this change for conservation concerns to the Hump Tulips Wild Steelhead, your staff and the commissioners we spoke with are in agreement that the social benefit this change will provide for the larger sport fishing community is critical in a time when many in the sport fishing community at odds over regulations and management of wild steelhead. You might hear from a few select guides or individuals about the need to have bait and barbs remain on this section of river because they don't have a detrimental effect to wild steelhead, remove hatchery fish from the river, or provide a better angling experience for their clients. But please remember that those are only observations from a select few and are directed at this rule change from a conservation perspective, which your staff and commission has stated is not the issue. As an individual who works and guides on the Hump Tulips River, I can assure you that I have never seen this type of broad-based support for a rule change from conservation groups to guide associations. The long-term social benefit to not only the fishery, but the goodwill this creates for the department to make a regulation change based on this support will go a long way toward the WDFW staff and constituents working together in the future to improve our sport fishing opportunities and conservation needs for Washington's wild steelhead. Thank you for your time. Tom Moonen.
Anybody else want to provide a comment?
He's old and slow.
Seth Ewing, Tacoma, Washington. I basically just would like the select of girls reinstated. I don't believe it should have ever been removed. It's a common sense rule. There's the possibility that you will hook wild fish and you need to have barbless hooks. You need to have no bait. It's just something that needs to be put back in, and there's no reason why it ever should have been taken away.
Bill Osborne, I'm here to give testimony on the hump tulips. I think the river ought to be closed from February 28th upriver on the West Fork, and if it's going to be open, it should be a bait ban. And I'd like to know how many hatchery fish are up there and why they're fishing. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
Did you tell them everything I want to say, Bill? Yeah. Okay.
Well, you know, you might want
to
add your voice.
Anybody else?
Okay, well, then let's talk about what happened last year in the fall conference. So, one more slide. So, basically, we're collecting the public input tonight, and then there's still the website that was on the earlier slide, graceharbor@dfw.wa.com, if you want to file or comment before the end of tonight. Then what happens, this is just a bunch of jargon, but it's stuff we have to pay attention to. It's part of the legal process. We file what's called a CR-102. And if we make this change, if we don't make a change, then it just stays as it is. If we make a change and go back to the selective year rule, then it will show up in the CR-102. And it's going to be wrapped around all of Norfolk Falcon changes that we're making. So that we expect to be filed sometime beginning of May. Then it takes a while for all the typing to happen. And there's and then it gets published. And it's a very public process at this point, formally through the OFM. So then between the 102 is just, this is exactly what we're proposing the law to say. So it's in that whole legalized type language. But this will be very specific and tell you exactly what we're talking about. And then there's at least a 35-day period between that, while the public has a chance to think about the rules and go through them and formulate their opinion. And then there's required public hearing before these rules are adopted. And we expect that public hearing is going to be about toward the end of June. It hasn't been set yet, but because it all depends on when this gets filed, how the timing works. So we're expecting that. And then once the 102 is filed and the public hearing has happened and more public input is collected there, then the director will make a decision on the package to go forward or not. So what this website is down here is this. If you go to this website, there'll be a lot of lines there, a lot of different topics. If you click on any one, and it will take you directly to the documents that are relevant to this formal process, so to make it easy for you to find them. But we will also be sending out notifications to try to make it easy. Because this, our new website is great. It's simpler than it ever was before, but you got to get used to it.
Looks like it.
So we'll this presentation and all this will get posted to our advisory board site where we post all of our materials, so you can find us again. You can write this down now if you want. We've got your email address, assuming that you wrote it down legibly and we can read it. Hopefully, I think most of you, we probably are already on our Grace Harbor distribution list, so if anybody's not, just make sure that we have your email address correctly, and we will make sure to, to notify you so that, but if you want to follow the process on your own, independently from us, then there's a way for you to do that. And that's the process.
That was about an hour and 15 minutes. What are we going to do?
This has been like the best, shortest meeting we've ever had.
Let's not order it.
So, did I ask a question?
I don't know. Do you know the answer?
Well, no, I don't. I'm looking for the answer. So, with the group that's here that's interested in implementing or changing these, if you were to look at that area that's changed, that area that's closed and now has bait fishing or whatever. If you were to look at that type of fishery that's changed in the last year, the type of fisherman that's in there fishing, and you were to look at harvest compared to what it was, can you get an idea of the number of how it's changed? I mean, if you were to say that there's an impact to fish, could we say that there's 50 fish harvested, 100 fish harvested, or impacted because of that number? I'm trying to figure out a number on that. Or do you see an increase in fish harvesting?
Hatchery fish?
No, harvested or wild fish. It impacts you fish.
He means the mortalities.
Mortalities. Yes. Or have you seen an increase in effort? Or is it a particular group? Maybe it's a guy who just now using bait and wasn't using it before. Okay, what is the change that you've seen?
I think for myself, it has to do with basically making people can use it and what that the outcome of that could be is what is the problem. And that basically saying that, well, the numbers look, we're in good shape, we're a little bit over 1,600 or whatever.
Sure.
So what you're basically saying is, well, we're safe, so let's just pour the bait to them, treble hooks, wrap the plugs, get them boys, or whatever. Well, that's telling us that, we don't want that. Why would we want to, because we're a little bit high? It's like having, for example, Coho, we have a projected decent year return, whatever. So that's why we do the season setting on all these meetings on that stuff, is because, and what you're hearing most people say on that is, hang on, because we've had such a bad deal with the code, most people, we'd rather let them, try to come back. Or I think it's silly to even think that way. The rule was in place. No one complained particularly about it. I mean, unless you show, there's all these people called in and said, I can't read these rules, the rules. I don't understand, that one rule right up here above 101 is this in that one month. It throws me off on the whole deal. I don't know what I'm looking at. It really isn't happening. I think that's what it is. I agree.
So back to my question. The change in that area, because a lot of that area is locked up.
Yeah.
It's off the creek all the way down. The increased effort, what kind of mortality would we see because of the change in that world?
I see mortality. If you're fishing with barbed bait,
what has been the outcome of the rule change?
I think that we're opening ourselves up to it. I mean, I haven't seen an increase in effort. I haven't seen, maybe my thing, that's what everybody does, is go down the river and you do your thing or whatever. But in fact, we've had such a low water year, I can't even tell you if it's ever been up.
Yeah.
And we had 2 months of low water. So everybody's, so I don't think in a row or this year even came into play, honestly.
Sure.
Because you weren't allowed to get there.
Right.
But it just comes down to your question, I think, is an obvious one.
regardless of non-baited hooks, they are not taken anywhere near as deep. Pretty much on a 95% hookup rate, they're not going to be taken deep. You throw bait in there, everything's going deep, and there's going to be damage. The fish are going to die.
Presentation is, you know, everything, of course. I mean, if there's some argument, like with double hook rig, the cheater works better. I think it does. You know, I know the Forks guys, they said that was one of the things they had to go to a single hook, actual single hook, with bait, whatever. They actually had more fish swallow that than they did with two hooks. It's similar to what we're talking about here.
So, call sex is the one.
And then Joe. And Art.
Paul.
It's my concern, as Jim said, that you're opening the door for the potential for folks to go in there with gear and target these fish in a way that has every way of harming them to a death, mortality impact. When you are allowing folks to go in there with bait and divers, and a fish guts that thing, there's no, and it's bleeding, it's probably going to die. It's probably going to die, for sure. And so, I can tell you right now, as a guy, I could go in there and have way better banner days fishing bait than I could some days just fishing artificial. That's just what it is. But I don't need to fish bait to catch fish up in that stretch of river. And you're talking about a fish that you legally in this state can't even completely remove from the water to take a picture of, but yet you're still allowing folks right now to go in there and fish in a manner that could potentially kill them. And like Jim said, this year has been a low water year. I never even floated Donkey Creek one time this season because we didn't have the water to do it. And so this year, I can't give you a good, you know, good feedback on how it was for me. I can tell you that there was other folks in there fishing bait, and they were having absolutely banner days. And I just personally had told myself that I wasn't going to do it, and the guys that I associate myself with aren't going to do it. And hopes that this gets put back to the way it was. It was working, and nobody asked for this to be changed, and so we'd like to just see it go back. Also, it remains consistent with the rest of the Olympic Peninsula systems, all the way to Forks, from 101 upstream to selective gear rules at March 1st. So, that's my comment here.
Joe?
Kurt, you asked a question about why they say that their spawning beds are up in the river with lost fish. They're looking for power. You're the guy that has the stock analysis. You're the farmer up there. You're the one that knows what's up there. You know what's spawning and what's not. Now, those rules, the second year rules were put in when the runs were down. And those rules, I think, got built over, built fish back up. Plus, we had the closure there at Forks Hole for a few years. Then they moved it back to Donkey Creek Bridge. Now it's all the way back up to the mountain Donkey Creek. As far as I'm concerned, from Donkey Creek down to the bridge should never be able to bring fish, except for maybe summertime trout. Because they're pulling silvers off the spawning beds. And that, I don't know if you know better than I do. The bridge, Donkey Creek, and above it is prime spawning habitat still at Polo. So there, you, the people of Fish and Wildlife, came to us at the time and says, how about we take that and protect it a little bit better so your village runs back up? We went along with it. We agreed with it, and we stuck with it. And last year, somehow it got changed. Whenever it changed. I don't think it went through the public hearing process at all. It just said, hey, we see they're coming back. Well, they're going to continue to come back. And
If you go back onto them like we did, you're never going to see bills above a certain point. This is going to have to be a healthy stream up there. We're not going below the escapement hole ever again. So that we can harvest fish out of that river and harvest it safely, conservation wise, give these guys opportunity to fish, but I would still cut it off at the bridge. Because above there, it's bocce. I've gone down there and just watched years back. And I told you about it. And that's where we got the first time about the change. That was back in, I think, the late 80s.
Art, you had your hand up too.
I just can't say whether you use barbed hooks or barbless hooks. By the time you get that native in, he's worn out. Yep. So unless you know how to handle them, cut your leader, don't mess with them, they won't survive. So it does make any difference whether you go barbless or barbed or bait. It's going to be all the same thing. You've got to know how to handle the fish. I've been fishing with a lot of years.
I'm probably the old man in here. I was started teaching in 1968, and somebody mentioned that March used to be the end of the Skewerhead fishery. I remember April, the end of April, on the stats off in the Waiamuchi. You could fish a whole month, and I had a teacher. I was a teacher, I had spring vacation. And I'm here to tell you, I had both rivers to meet. I mean, people were farming, and I mean, they were spreading manure out there, and I'm catching 15 to 25 pound steelhead on the sandtop of my energy in those days. Okay? And they went away. Probably didn't get any help, but I would be opposed to having the west fork of the Honduras open during March. Somebody's got to be conservation wise, and I'm here to tell you, if you leave it open, Seattle's coming. Melbourne's coming. I meet more people, Fall City. I survived Black Creek this winter, and there were people from Fall City and Snohomish coming down to fish the Waiamuchi. And they go on out west for it just like everybody else. So I think it ought to be closed.
So just to make sure everybody knows whether we close in March or keep it open is for another day. Today it's just about whether March has the selective year rules or not. That's the only thing we're going to be deciding through this process.
Just make your comment again about the closure on the rest of the peninsula stream. Are they open in March?
Yeah, they're open, but they're open to selective year rules from 101 upriver.
That only happened just a couple of years, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
On all of them.
Yeah.
Yes. So from all of them.
That's because the numbers were probably bad.
It's been about 7 years selective year.
Only because it's a part of the creek. So.
So for simplification purposes, let's just keep the selective year rules from 101 up.
It doesn't seem like it's too hard to change one river compared to the rest. Might as well just do it and go ahead and finish the whole circle.
You guys understand? I mean, we just got accused of having what do you call them, CE meetings?
I don't remember
scheduling those. So what I do know, though, is we have a CR process that we have to go through.
Yep.
So that when we propose a rule and we make a change, it's a public process, and it has to be that way. We can't operate any other way. Hang on. and so that is what we're doing here today.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have been emailing you, talking to you, trying to get something set up similar to North of Falcon for steelhead. And every guy in this room would be there. Mm-hmm. And we still have that nothing. We want to do it for Grace Harbor, basin-wide, so that we don't have these sneaky-peaky
things can happen that we don't know about, and all the shit that shows are going to happen. So please get together with whoever you can talk to.
I will be with
you. We can sit down and have some of the Norfolk Falcons at least 2 or 3 meetings on the border. These guys are for it. Just pursue it.
Okay.
Thank her.
These guys are for it. Everybody here is.
So how are you getting these on this map? How are you getting these stream studies? Where are you, how are you getting these where these confined areas are? From stream studies from the tribe?
Okay.
Exactly.
So the reference being what?
Well, you don't know the right numbers. I mean, are the right numbers these numbers? Are just what they want to tell you? Because you're not getting the right numbers from the fish tank from them either. So
you probably know my background. I spent 20 years.
I do.
20 years with them, so I know a lot of that data where it was collected.
Yep.
So I work with them on their data collection as well, both in the hardware and on the
hardware. I haven't got nothing against them for the most part.
So it's basically what you're saying.
I know.
Yeah.
I know for I grew up on the Hoquiam River, and I knew when he set the trap on the Hoquiam River. Met exactly that.
So, are you thinking they're overestimates, or do you think they're underestimates? Or what are you saying?
I don't think they're accurate, but I think they should be looking a lot further, because these fish run all the way to the gorge, and they're not in that. I mean, there is some spawning areas in that area. I grew up there.
Sure.
I know. They haven't changed.
So the corals have 5 main stand indexes on the Hump Tubes. 2 of them are above the gorges, 1 in the East Fork, 18 to 21 on the East Fork,
okay.
And they 1-6 to 4-4 on the East Fork, and they do 1 above the gorge on the above Chester Creek.
Right.
They do 1 just above Donkey Creek, in a 4-mile section there. They do 16 to 19 to the main stem. So they have 5 main stem indexes.
Right.
In addition to do those, they live 10 to 14 days and they fly the main stem.
Right.
And then they do 5 or 6 tributaries. So the data would say 80% of the main stem, 80% of the split spawners are in the main stem, 20% of them are in the trips.
Right.
And majority of the stuff we do in the Grace Harbor for tributaries, we only look at 40% of the actual areas that they spawn. But when the data says we actually look at 70% of the spawners, so we're actually targeting the main stem, the high density area. When you see those stuff up there,
right.
the lighter stuff we don't hit because it's just worth our time. We don't have that much staff to do that. So, they're covering the majority of the habitats out there. In fact, if you look at their data, they're covering 90% of the habitat that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
So
I guess my question is, too, is, so why aren't you adding that data in and not having the staff in? Because it kind of gives, I guess it gives the people the idea that the escapement rate isn't right. You see what I mean?
Sure.
So, if you went through a section of river and you I'm just going to throw a number out here. If you said, okay, there's 500 reds,
mm-hmm.
and so is that 500? How many fish are still on a red? 4.
So these are relative estimates of abundance, right? So red-based escapement is not an absolute. I mean, we reckon everybody that. All scientists recognize that's not an absolute estimate of spawning fish, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a relative estimate of abundance. We set a metric that says that if we put, 1,700 reds in the gravel here,
right.
then we'll meet our escapement objective in terms of red counts, right?
Right.
Is it that we have high water events, we have, you know, challenges with that.
Right.
So we know that if we put that many fish in the spawning grounds, we can be relatively sure that it will perpetuate that run over time. And there's some different, all kinds of different methods that have been used
right.
to develop those goals.
So why does the size of the run keep falling every year?
Steelhead are unique. Steelhead are the marathon migrators. They're out off the Aleutian chain. If you look at across the range of steelhead, winter steelhead, 1989-1990, simultaneous declines in abundance across the entire range, from California all the way to Alaska. If you look at steelhead, they track very well together. Even in habitats that are destroyed versus like Puget Sound, if you look at them and compare them with some of the coastal runs, you'll see those relative tracking numbers that track each other, which almost points almost exclusively to ocean survival. The Salish Sea Project right now, I know Annette's been tracking that, is a concerted effort to look at why these fish are dying in the marine environment. Predation, competition, fisheries. Lots of folks are looking at this and spending a bunch of money on it to better understand. I mean, heck, look at Puget Sound. I mean, if there's a bigger tragedy out there other than orcas, it's got to be sealed in Puget Sound. I mean, I grew up in Puget Sound. I know a bunch of other people in here grew up in Puget Sound. And that's one of the concerns, is where are people fishing now? And we don't have those opportunities. They're coming out to fish
the tulips. They're coming down here, and they're fishing the upper fork of the Hump Tulips.
So that's why we're watching. That's why Kurt and others are on the ground watching these numbers and making sure that those numbers don't dip under. I know, and I said it when I started. You guys are, I get it, right? I steal headfish as well. You care.
You know, as far as, like, monies and all that, though, for licenses, why aren't they paying an extra fee to fish down here like we have to pay up there?
Who's they?
Puget Sound people.
Charge more to come out here?
Hell yeah.
Stop with the county line. Hell yeah. Charging more to go to a Seahawks game? Bad analogy, but
severe. I'm just curious what the grant count, or like if it's a really, really low year, just being out there, I think that it is.
Yeah, so far right now we're running about 100 fish below on our trap council on leech. And our council on the super jogger down as well. I mean, we saw that north above the coast. Everything was in down this year.
Yeah, that's what I'd say. It started, of course, with hatchery fish. Yep. And then the wilds. Like Larry was saying, they seem to kind of go together across the board or whatever. And they started with the hatchery fish. And I thought, well, it'll be all right. After the wilds broke down, we got it.
All right, gentlemen.
That's it.
Again, right. Appreciate your time. Thanks. This is helpful.
Oh, you guys got off
there. Have a safe trip.
Yeah, right. Midnight for the public holiday or whatever.
You have to. I know, man. It's funny.